Welcome to True Crime in the Low Country, where we explore the darkest corners of the region's criminal history. Join host Frank Santarella and co-hosts Crime and Cask, Jim Cask, and Elaine Greenwood of Superwoke News as they dissect the chilling details of the Murdaugh murder trial, a case that has gripped the nation and exposed years of fraud, deception, and tragedy. It's true crime in the Low Country, and the truth is just around the corner.
How you guys doing? This is Frank on Target, and the program is True Crime in the Low Country. And on the line, we have Jim Cask of Crime and Cask and Elaine Greenwood of Superwoke News. You can catch Elaine on X, and you can catch Jim on... Come on, Jim, hit it.
Crimeandcask.com.
Crimeandcask.com. I'm going to tell you, what a pair of characters. What a pair of characters. But, you know, the God's honest truth is it takes all kinds. And regardless of how we joke around here, Jim has some real, real relevant stuff going on today. And it's all about how it was impossible for Alex Murdaugh to be the murderer. Jim, talk to us. Tell us what's going on.
Okay, so let's all dial back a little bit and remember the opening statements. The opening statements during the Alex Murdaugh trial, none other than the great guitarist Creighton Waters pulled out his cell phone and he held it up in the air. You remember that?
Yeah.
And he's like,
I don't think we recognized he was a great guitarist at that point, but sure.
He says, everybody has got one of these, and this is going to put Mr. Murdaugh away because the digital evidence proves beyond a shadow of a doubt, reasonable doubt, whatever he said, that, you know, that he was there, he was at the kennels, and he lied and all these things. That was a big moment. And then they went through detailed analysis with Sledge and Radolfsky on where he was, where Alec was, and what he was doing with his cell phone, what Maggie was doing with her cell phone, what Paul was doing with his cell phone. The trial really had a lot of cell phone data, not only who they called, when they called, steps that were recorded, GPS locations. I mean, what else did they have, Elaine? They had all kinds of stuff.
And a lot of it proved to be, first of all, that kind of testimony is a little bit confused. It's monotonous. It puts you to sleep, unfortunately. And they had a lot of stuff wrong. And they actually completely failed to even contact the manufacturer of the vehicle to see if the OnStar stuff was linked to the phone and other things like that. So anyway, but yeah, so they did. They did rely on their analysis of cell phone data. That's true. Did that take us in a good direction, Jim?
Hey, Jim, run down the timeline for us and tell us exactly how this is relevant. And the other thing I'd like you to refute is, and I tell you what, I get this from pro Alex's Guilty of Sin believers that his presence at the kennels just prior to the murder and the proof that it was on Paul's phone, right?
There's a video on Paul's phone, yeah.
Yeah. All right. Address those issues. Address your one first about the timeline about the phone, though.
Okay. So there's a lot. How far do you want me to go back in the time?
Well, I'm going to tell you something. Yeah, you have 55 minutes, and you have to convince me. So hit it.
Okay. All right. So let's. I'm not going to go way back into the day, but let's start at about 8 o'clock, and at 8:11:08. That's 8:11:08. Maggie's iPhone device shows it's locked. Okay, nothing big there. But at 8:17, her phone ends a connection to the Mercedes Benz. So that means that she arrived and turned her car off at Moselle at 8:17. All right, the murder, according to Sled, happened around 8:49. So it is just about
32 minutes
before she dies. So she gets home, at 8:17, and then she had her phone plugged in. This is the kind of data that this thing tells you. She unplugged her phone from a charging device. That's the type of data that your phone records every time you do something. Every time you do something. Now, at 8:19, it shows that Paul Murdaugh is at the main house at 4147 Motel Road. So they're all there. Alec is there. Paul is there. Maggie just got home. Now, Maggie was supposed to get home earlier, remember, to go see Dad, because Dad was going to the hospital, but visiting hours ended at, I think, 8 o'clock, or maybe it was 7 o'clock. So Alex wasn't too happy with her. Maybe she went and got her nails done. She went and stopped at McDonald's. Like, you know, he kept calling her and all these different things. But so he wasn't too happy she got home at 8:17. Let's see. She's now here's an interesting thing. Your phone, every time, let's say you unlock it, the light comes on, you unlock your phone, and you make an orientation change. So that means you change it from whatever landscape, which is sideways, to portrait, which is long way,
vertical,
standing in front of you, normal. And even record steps. At 8:30 to 8:33, Maggie's phone is recording 43 steps. And even Agent Radulski went through everybody's steps that day and times that their phones recorded steps. And he even recorded even recorded the steps per minute, which sometime during this broadcast, I will show you that he got his facts wrong, and he presented wrong information to the jury. That, as far as I know, and I did research on this to no end yesterday, no one has reported on his mistake that I just found. And, I, you know, there's just so much data on this thing. So they're getting group text messages. This is now 8:30. They get group text messages from John Marvin still asking about visiting the ailing father. 8:44, this is still Maggie's phone, but at 8:44, the video was extracted from Paul's phone at the kennels. That's the video you're talking about where Alex lied about being at the kennels. That happened at 8:44:55, almost 8:45, quarter to nine.
All right, now, how does that relate to the time of the murders?
Pardon me? Let him keep going. Frank, let him keep going. He's building this. Go, Jim. Keep going.
Yeah. So this is 8:45, and it's about, 8:45. It's 4 minutes before they are dead, according to the state. According to when their phone stopped moving, the state said that's when they died. I'm not saying that's when they died. It's probably likely that is, but... that's what the state said.
Wait a minute. Now, I thought you said it was 8:49 when they think the murder occurred, right?
It is. Yeah.
Oh, all right. That's what I was asking. That there was 4 minutes. 4 minutes.
Yeah. Eight.
After.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. 4 minutes after.
Keep going. Yeah.
Yeah. At 8:49:01, Paul Murdaugh's phone was last locked. So excuse me. It was locked at 8:49:01. That's when his phone stopped doing anything forever that he initiated at that time, 8:49:01. Okay, so, but remember, let's jump back here at 8:45. Alex said on the stand, now I'm just taking what he said on the stand. He said when he arrived down at the kennels, what did he say he did? He said he saw Paul in the kennels doing that video, and that's when he pulled up. And then you have Maggie with the, oh, it's a chicken, or it's a guinea, no, it's a chicken.
Right. Right.
That all happened there. And then Alex said what? He said, I got the chicken out of Bubba's mouth, I put the chicken up, and I got the hell out of there. He says, I didn't want to...
He put the chicken on the doghouse. He put the body of the chicken on the roof of the doghouse. That independent little structure that has to do with measuring the trajectory of, you know, where the killer of Maggie was standing. And, you know, there is that. That's
irrelevant. Strike that from the record.
Not,
go ahead.
Not at all irrelevant, Frank. It's extremely irrelevant into understanding the height of the shooter that killed Maggie and what the hell, the trajectory of that gun, because there's a bullet that lodged in or went through the doghouse.
Here's what Maggie did. So Maggie is presumed to be inside the hangar. And we know that at 8:49:20, her phone display turned on due to a notification. And at 8:49:26.
You threw a notification. Who was the notification from?
Well, it said that 8:49:26, she got a SMS message that was being processed on her phone. But at 8:49:26, she locked her phone. So her phone didn't lock on its own. She hit the side button that locked her phone. But she also unlocked it that second afterwards. So what she got was she locked her phone, then all of a sudden got a text message, and she unlocked her phone. And she took her, she unlocked her phone 8:49:26. It was a group.
That's when she unlocked
message.
It?
Yeah. She had a group text message.
Okay. From who?
No.
The John Marvin group?
Yeah. Yeah. It was that group text message.
Okay.
And that was received, let's see, 8:49:27. So then her phone locks at 8:49:31. So exactly 30 seconds after Paul was shot. But Alex said he was down there for maybe, what do you say, 2 minutes? And then he got out of there. Maggie's in the hangar, so my thought is, here's what happened. If he's on the golf cart, she either walked with him alongside the golf cart, or knowing Maggie, because he said she didn't like to walk, but she didn't walk a lot. So she jumps in the golf cart, he drops her off in front of the hangar, and he takes off. It's a two-minute golf ride back.
Yeah.
It's a two-minute golf ride back. So the timing of this is incredible. Because if you think about it, if the killers were there to kill both Paul and Maggie, why wait until Maggie's out of the equation? Just kill them both when they're down there. Or if you're there to kill Alec, Paul, and Maggie, kill them all at the same time. Why wait until Paul is alone?
No idea.
Or perceived to be alone. So by the time Alec gets back, there's only 30 seconds or so, and that is the 30 seconds when Paul's phone locks, and then 30 seconds later, Maggie's phone locked. So presumably Maggie locked her phone at 8:49:31 because she heard the first shot. And she would have heard Paul scream.
But why would she lock a phone? In response to that, hearing that shot, why would she lock a phone?
Just kind of she was on her phone and all of a sudden, you know, it's just a natural reaction. I do that too. I don't think I ever locked my phone.
Okay. So she you're talking about just pressing that side button, right? She had an iPhone, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Now both of them are presumed dead at this time. Sometime right after, between 8:49:31, Paul is shot, and she is shot seconds later after she comes out of the hangar. I'm not here to talk about that. We've talked about that before. But here's what's interesting. This is extremely, extremely interesting. Because if she shot at 8:49, her phone goes at 8:49:31, so let's say her phone, or she's died somewhere 10 seconds later. So almost 8:50. So 3 minutes pass after she's shot, and at 8:53:15, Maggie's phone starts to record steps again. So SWAT agent Britt Dove...
Say that again. At 8:49...
8:49:31 is presumed. She locked her phone at 8:49:31.
Right.
We presume she was killed
at 8:49:50. And you're saying at 8:49:40, at 8:49:50, the phone starts moving again?
8:53.
Oh, that's huge.
8:53.
So well after she was shot. 8:53?
Yeah, it's 3 minutes and some change.
Okay. And it starts moving again,
It starts moving again. And SWAT agent Britt Dove testified that it has suggested that someone was manipulating her phone. So someone had Maggie's phone and was walking with it. But here's the thing. If this is Alex that grabs her phone, and I'm saying if this is Alex that grabs her phone, he would have just shot Maggie and shot Paul at the kennels. So this means that her phone is still down to kennels because...
Right.
He's not
going to
just shoot them and then, you know, take off. So he's down there at the kennel. And this person is walking very slow. They are walking 0.43 steps per second. And that is, let me do the math on that one real quick. 0.43 times 60, that's 25 steps. A minute, which is really slow, considering in just a few moments, according to Sled, Alec is taking 70 steps per minute. So think about that.
They're looking at the phone. It's somebody. It's a killer looking at
their
phone.
They're looking at the phone. In fact, her phone tried to take a picture of the person who was looking at the phone. It was trying to recognize and see if it was Maggie to open her phone, but it didn't open because it wasn't Maggie.
Wow.
So this person has it.
Maggie had an iPhone 13. She had an iPhone 13 and iPhone 12.
I don't think it was a 13, no. I don't know what model it was, but
I think it was 12. Okay, 12. Yeah. It was right in that. Okay, good.
Yeah.
I was trying to take a picture of her. Okay.
Yeah. So now her phone is going to 25 steps per minute, which is fairly slow.
Oh, one last thing. Alec wouldn't have needed to do that because Alec had the password to her phone. He could have opened the phone.
So it was Alec to her phone.
You had the password, because you later gave it to the law enforcement. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And so her phone starts making orientation changes from landscape to portrait. And I told you that the camera activated. And it was unsuccessfully unlocked. Okay, so now we're at 8:55:32, and the orientation change to portrait has ended. And Agent Dove said at this particular time, at 8:55:32, that he noted that the phone appeared to be in someone else's hand. So, again, if we're going with Alec as the killer, it's in his hand. And he's walking the slowest he's ever walked all day long, because I have his steps per minute. And his steps per minute... a couple of times during the day. I shouldn't say that. He did have lower steps, but for the most part.
But Jim, look, the claim here is that somebody is looking to see whether Maggie recorded any part of her own death or any evidence of maybe a screenshot of who was shooting at her or whatever. So they wanted to see what evidence was on the phone. If Alec wanted to check that evidence, he had the password to the phone. He wouldn't have had to wait or walk slowly or look at it or use the photo recognition capability of the phone. He had the password. He could have unlocked the phone and accessed whatever he wanted, deleted whatever he wanted, done anything he wanted. So, I mean, there's a lot of just credible reason to believe this wasn't Alex holding the phone or prompting the phone to do anything.
So now her phone doesn't have much activity at all until 9:06:12. But I'm going to jump now just for a second to Alex's movements, and then we'll get back to Maggie's in a second. So at 9:02, so put a pin in Maggie's movements for a second. At 9:02:18, Alex's phone comes alive.
9:02:18?
Yeah, 9:02:18.
Alex's phone comes alive?
Yes, his phone starts to make movements at 9:02:18 to 9:06:47. And the 9:06:47 is very important to note.
Okay.
His phone is making movements, including steps. So it's in his hand, he's walking, and he's making phone calls.
Yes.
Right? And this is where Creighton Waters started, you know, badgering Murdaugh about, why were you in such a hurry, Mr. Murdaugh? You know, the most steps you made all day long. According to Adrian Rudolphsky, it was 283 steps. And Adrian Rudolphsky said that those were the most steps he took during the day, which was 70.75 steps per minute. That number, ladies and gentlemen, as I did the math on all his spreadsheet for everything, is plain wrong. And it's not wrong by, you know, some of the times he was wrong, he just rounded up. So he was off by, you know, a tenth of a percent or something like that. He was off by 29 seconds. He put the time between 9:02:18 and 9:06:47 as 4 minutes. It's not 4 minutes. It's 4 minutes and 29 seconds. which takes his steps per minute from 70.75, and it drops it down to 63.12. So, and what's funny about it is that I'm quoting Creighton Waters here. When he's talking to Adrian Radulski, he goes, "This is simple math, isn't it?" Apparently not, because he was wrong.
Yeah, he was wrong by a little bit.
He was wrong by a lot.
Okay, so this gets back, Jim, to an observation that Frank and I and everybody on the planet that listens to you has made. Alex's defense needs to hire you because this is outrageous.
No one has found this out. It is 2025, 4 years almost after the murders. And I'm just discovering this myself. And honestly, I've been on this case for a long time, too. So
what made you look at this? What made you look at this? You were just reviewing stuff as a matter of good investigative journalism, or what?
I was. And I came up to this YouTube video where Radulski was in it. And I started looking. I was watching the YouTube video, and he came up with these again. I said, you know what? I don't think I've ever done his math, because I've done a lot of these steps per minute myself. So I'm like, let me look at his map. And I literally went through and did the start and stop times and figured out the difference between it, make sure his time elapse was correct, how many steps were there, and I did the steps per minute math. And he was wrong on quite a few of them. I did a spreadsheet on it. But again, most of them were just, it was negligent. It didn't really care. It didn't matter. You know, right. It was like 0.1 or something like that. But this one was huge. And what I found interesting in his statement when he mentioned this, okay, this is where I think this is dirty as hell. I'll give him the benefit of the doubt, but I think it's dirty. From 902, when he talks about 902.18 to 906.47, and he gives the 4 minutes and 283 steps and 70.75 steps per second or per minute, he stops and then he goes, estimated. He says the word estimated. I thought, you know what? And that's the only time he said the word estimated was at that one. That was just wrong. Because 70 is a big number, and it really throws it out there that, yeah, it was the most steps he took during the day. So Creighton Waters gets to go out there and go, well, wow, is that the most steps he took during the day? Yes, it is. And if you look at steps per minute, it is at 70. But if you take that out, it still is the most steps that he took during the day. But the second one is like 57, and then 61. So it just fills in with the rest of them. I think they manipulated the data on purpose, but that's just me.
Okay, so listen, this is a tactic. I don't know if you guys know this or not, but attorneys do this when they file things. So like they change years, they change dates. I think they do it intentionally, and if the opposing party doesn't correct it and doesn't notice it, those dates always impact claims made in the case, and they become considered to be true simply because it was an error that the opposing party didn't catch. And okay, so when they cumulatively make little errors of a little bit here and a little bit there, cumulatively, that is a very false narrative. And I think that we should not allow our public servants to do that, especially in a criminal case involving homicide. The stakes are too important. You have to ask the question,
is this the first and only mistake that Sled made during this investigation?
See, I don't even want to think about it. I think the answer probably is, oh, heck no. Okay. Frankly, we know from the hematrace test and other stuff, you know what the answer to that is as well.
I do know what the answer is.
Listen, let me tell you something. They could have, what do you call it? The prosecution could have said that it was that Alex was an alien, and they would have sucked it up. The damn jury, right? The jury wasn't there with a pencil. They were.
No, it was tedious. It was tedious. I listened to some of that testimony, and you know they're sitting there on a wooden bench, I think. And anyway, whatever it is, it's tedious to listen to. I didn't think that it was I thought it was hard to follow as the prosecution presented it, and I think that the defense's reaction to it wasn't clear enough, strong enough, and I think it should have been much more simple. But these errors of math. But here's the thing. Maybe the defense maybe the prosecution didn't make those mistakes till at trial. So that, you know, it's one thing to say, I know the record and I know the details, and you're sitting there at the defense table, and then at trial, while they're saying this, you might not immediately pick up on that's the wrong date. You know, a lot of times when we're talking about stuff, and I'll say, no, that was September 5th or whatever, or no, that actually was on September 15th or whatever. Those little details, believe it or not, sometimes are monumentally important. And either you have a brain that picks up on that or you don't. And if you don't, cumulatively, those little errors paint a picture. I don't think they're unintentional. I think they're absolutely intentional. And it's like creating a tsunami, one impulsion at a time, that collectively paints a very false image.
Yeah, I told you before, I used to be a turnaround expert, and so I'm used to looking at large, vast amounts of data and be able to put them into a semblance of order, kind of like a puzzle. And and I know when pieces are missing and why it's missing. So this particular thing just jumped out at me. I'm like, I need to go look at this data. And all of a sudden, I'm like, wait, this isn't right. This isn't right. But let's jump back to when Alex's phone was moving. Remember I said that at 9:02?
Yeah.
And his phone was moving up until, let me look, sorry. Here's where we start getting into the weeds a little bit here, and things start getting dicey. So Alex is still moving at 9:04:23. He's one of those guys. You saw him at the dog kennels when they were interviewing him. He's just walking around. Did you see him talking to his brother Randy? He's just walking, right?
Yes.
That's what he does. That's his thing. So at 9:04:23, Alex calls Maggie. And it's an 18-second call, so I'm assuming he calls it till it goes to voicemail. Okay? And
yes.
Alec is walking, and he's recording steps during this time. I have it down by step per second instead of step per minute, but it's roughly 60 steps per minute. It's 1.05 steps per second. I just think that's more accurate. But so he's walking. But here's the thing. Maggie's phone was recording steps, remember? Not that long ago. At 8:53, her phone was recording steps. So we know her phone can record steps. Her phone did record steps. But at 9:04:23, when Alec is calling her and the phone is ringing and he is walking, her phone is not recording steps. Okay?
Correct.
So, but that doesn't mean anything. At this point, it doesn't mean anything because Alec could just have her phone sitting on the golf cart and he's walking around calling it, okay? So, but it's not recording steps. 9:05:15, he calls his dad. That's another 18 seconds. He's still walking, okay? But here's where the rubber hits the road. At 9:06:12. Maggie Murdaugh's iPhone implements an orientation change to portrait. In 8 seconds from now, and from 8 seconds from 9:06:12, 8 seconds from now, it's going to be tossed. But I'm just saying, right now it makes an orientation change because at 9:06:14, and this is the day right here, this is the day and time, 9:06:14, Alex calls Maggie's iPhone, and he's at the main house at Moselle. Alex is still walking, and Maggie's phone is still recording movements at the exact same time. But Maggie's phone is not recording steps, while Alex's is. And the prosecution even screwed up and tried to make the assumption that Alex picked up her phone and turned it to portrait while he had his phone in his hand and dialed her phone to see that it rang through. Two things can't be true.
One, Alex can't be calling her while he's walking and recording steps and her phone make movements. If he has her phone in his hand, her phone is going to be recording steps. Her phone is not recording steps at 9:06:14. It's not recording steps at 9:06:12. But Alex's phone is recording steps. Now, so what can't be true is, well, I shouldn't say what can't be true. According to Apple, and I looked this up yesterday, Apple says there's two reasons that a person's phone would not be recording steps. One is they're not walking. I was like, yeah, okay. And the second one is, I mean, they had a very detailed explanation, but it's they're not walking. And the second reason is that their phone is in a moving object, vehicle, bicycle, whatever. And her phone is moving. But here's what happens. At 9:06:15, this is when Alex calls Maggie again. So he calls her at 9:06:14, hangs up, calls her again at 9:06:15. It's 3 seconds long. Guess what happens at 9:06:20?
The phone gets tossed.
Her phone goes from portrait, where it was at 9:06:12, to landscape. Now, if I'm going to throw a phone out a window, I'm not going to take it and throw it. I'm going to take it at landscape and whip it out the window. He called her at 9:06:14, 9:06:15. I've said this before. He called at 9:06:15 and he hung up because he thought that he heard them coming up from the kennels. You remember that? He said, I tried calling them. I said, well, I hear them coming. So it was only 3 seconds long. Because at 9:05:15, he called her for 18 seconds, or 9:04:23, excuse me. And so this one, he dialed it, and it's, they're coming up. So he hung up the phone. And then he said, well, then I realized it wasn't them. So then he's still by the main house, and he calls her again. This time, he's sitting in his Suburban. So he is done walking. But the biggest thing is 9:06:14 and 9:06:15, her phone is making movements from portrait to landscape, landscape to portrait, and it's not recording steps. That means that Alec Murdoch did not have Maggie's phone in his hand because his was recording steps and hers was not. And hers was making movements from landscape to portrait.
Stay with us on True Crime in the Lowcountry. We'll be right back after this short commercial break. Don't go away.